Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Audio Road. Welcome to the pit. Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. If you're listening online and you'd like to join us on the live call, pick up your phone and dial 347-884-8327. Tonight is Questions from the Audio Road. We're kind of moving the schedule around and just playing with some different things. Wide open phone lines. Anything you want to talk about tonight, anything goes. Get your calls and questions in early because it's really becoming a pattern that at the end of the show, I end up with 5 or 6 calls that I just can't get to because we run out of time. So we've got an hour, no breaks, but I want to make sure we don't pile up with a bunch of calls at the end that I can't get to. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it is, jump in, press 1, talk to Lisa for a bit, and then we'll get you on the air here. So 347-884-8327. If you're listening online, that'll get you on the live call. Once you're on the live call at any time, press 1. Lisa will come screen your call, see what it is you want to talk about, and then she'll send you over to me. So let's... You know, I had a couple things I wanted to start with tonight. Just one real quick, and I do see we've got some questions already, so jump in, and I'll get to those here in a little bit. We talked about this just a little bit last night, and I didn't listen to the news at all today, but I'm sure they're talking a lot about this. It's the report that came out that says we're going to need 400,000 truck drivers by 2011. I just can't believe how fast this changed, and I'm reading an article here from Indianapolis, kind of a local thing where they took that article and then went out and talked to some of the truck driving schools, and applications at the truck driving schools are way up. Want ads in the local paper for CDL drivers are up 25% in a month. Looks like they're saying 400,000 jobs in the next 2 years, and many of those jobs available immediately. They interviewed a 23-year-old student who is just about finished with school. He's a day away from taking his CDL test, and he said his phone is already ringing. Swift is called, and he has his pick of 4 or 5 different companies. Just amazing how fast that turned around. Interesting to see what it will do to pay. One of the problems with this is that because, you know, the latest jobs report came out, and I'm not really sure why we're so busy in the trucking industry right now, because the economy really hasn't picked up that much when you look at all the factors. And, you know, there were hardly any jobs added across the board last month, and most of the jobs that were added were government jobs. But we're certainly seeing a pickup in this industry. But if the rest of the economy doesn't pick up and people don't go back to work, you're going to see a huge influx of people like this who need a job, whether they care about the trucking industry or know anything about the trucking industry or really want to be a truck driver. They have to put food on the table. They're going to head into the industry. And if enough people do that, you certainly won't see driver pay go up. In fact, it could go down if you get enough new people in the industry without any experience. So it's an interesting time. You know, it would seem like that kind of demand for drivers should be a good thing. But if we don't see the rest of the economy pick up more than it has, I'm not so sure that it will be. I've got a couple other things, but I see some hands going up, so I am going to get to some calls. If you want to join us, there are some lines available, 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, press 1, and we'll get to your question here shortly. Let's go to Pat. Welcome to the program.
Evening, Kevin.
Well, good evening. I understand you have some good news.
Yes, I sent you and Lisa a copy of my ECM downloads. They're looking more and more impressive, even since Robert and I did the work we did last month.
That is pretty amazing stuff. So you saw just about a half mile per gallon increase from those changes.
Yes.
Now, that's pretty amazing considering you are already in the eights. You know, it's pretty tough to pick up a half mile per gallon when we're already that high. So what you changed was you ran the overhead, and that was due just because it was time.
Correct.
You put on air tabs, the fleet air filter, and you moved the fifth wheel forward and picked up a half mile per gallon.
Yes.
That's big.
Yeah, it really is. I didn't know what to expect out of it with the air tabs and the fleet air filter, did 4 items there and picked up a half a mile per gallon. And I wanted to talk to you about the FAST system. I'm still thinking about adding that. That's about the only thing I haven't added onto this thing yet.
Okay. Well, that would be interesting. I mean, the changes you just made, you know, pay for the FAST system in a couple months easily. So,
yep.
You know, it would be interesting. Here's the thing it's tough. When you start to get up to this high of fuel mileage, you start to second guess, should I do that? Because, for one, the returns aren't as big. You pick up a half mile per gallon. It's amazing. But the savings aren't nearly as big as somebody who's getting 5 and picks up a half mile per gallon. It's just it's a smaller percentage. But what we know is that once we prove a technology works, I mean, once we prove a product works or a technology or whatever, then logically it should work on any truck no matter what kind of fuel mileage we're getting. Now, the gain might be smaller and the savings might be smaller, but it should still work. There are just some things we don't know because we haven't tested many trucks that are getting near 9 miles to the gallon to know what changes do what.
Yeah, and you said second guessing. I mean, I was second guessing taking the time off and even do those changes I did at Roberts Fitzgerald. You know, I had him do all the work again. And
right.
But once it's done and I've seen results, I was just pleased as all get out. And it took about 2 weeks after driving it, after I left the shop, before I really started to see the numbers, you know, the numbers were coming in because the fuel gauge wasn't moving. I almost had to take it to the shop to see what's wrong with the fuel gauge. It's not moving that much.
Yeah, that is. And you're not running around light.
No, most my it's refrigerated freight I haul, and most of the times I'm between 78 and 80,000 pounds.
Yeah, that's So you're not getting this because you're running light freight on flat ground. This truck is doing really well with a lot of weight on it.
Yeah, and my normal run, or the majority of my run, is going from Kansas City to New York City, a lot of that running the hills across Pennsylvania. And
yeah,
we're still squeezing it out pretty good, you know, running that. Of course, like I said, my average speed, I'm usually running my speed right about 57.5. Between 57 and 57.5 is my average speed on the throttle.
Yeah,
and,
good.
Try to keep my boost when I'm in a hill, keep the boost below, the turbo boost below 20 PSI.
Well, it certainly is paying off.
Okay, but the fast, I mean, it's hard to guess what I might still gain out of the fast, but that'd still be a good choice to go with.
It would be. Yeah, it would be. I mean, and that just about, that almost finishes you. You haven't done the Evans coolant conversion yet, though.
No, that's a new one you've added on. Like I said, you know, this was a rolling glider from Robert Fitzgerald, you know, your signature truck. Columbia, 12.7, 10-speed direct, 264 rears, super singles. And it has the harmonic dampener, the dampener balancer, the port and polish exhaust manifold, the larger turbo, Bruce Mollinson's performance muffler. I already had Centromatics all the way around there running super singles. The Turbo 3000D. I have the air cell, the eco flaps, the, I call them my screen door mud flaps.
Right.
And then, like I said, we just added the air tabs and the fleet air filter. So, like I said, you just came up with the Evans coolant, so that might be on my list. And then, like I said, the fast system. But as I told everybody, I'm just about done with with anything, you know.
Yeah, well, I'd love to see the numbers on the fast system for a truck that's already getting really high fuel mileage. It would be interesting to see. So
okay.
I think you should do it just so you can be the guinea pig.
Well, me and Robert, I was gonna actually swing by. I drove by his shop today, but he was busy. I almost stopped by there to have it installed today, but he was trying to finish up another truck today, so... We're chopping at the bit. He's got one sitting there for me.
How often do you get by there?
Not that often. I mean, last month when I went by for the work, I actually took a deadheaded there to get the work done. And today the load took me right by there, but it's the first time I've had a load go by his shop.
Got it. We'll be there on the 22nd, and we'll be there for probably a little over 2 weeks.
Oh, really? For the 22nd of June for 2 weeks?
Yeah, 22nd of June, we'll be there, and we'll be staying we'll be staying there until we leave for the CMC.
Okay. And I will be bringing the truck to the CMC.
Excellent.
Give you a chance to actually see the truck in person.
That'll be great. We'd love to have it there.
Okay, well, I'll let you get on to another caller, Kevin, but just wanted to touch base. And like I said, I was excited about those downloads and sent them to you. And like I said, we're sizing up the fast system next.
Yeah, give it a shot. Appreciate it, and we will maybe we'll see you at Fitzgerald's, and if we don't see you there, we'll certainly see you at the CMC. Yeah, so here's our schedule. We will be leaving a week from yesterday, so less than a week we'll be on our way to Vegas for the Las Vegas Truck Show. We don't know for sure yet, but we are possibly going to be broadcasting that week from Las Vegas. We have the equipment. We are just waiting on the final approval from Sirius. So if we get that approval, all next week's shows during the week will be live shows. Weekend is going to be recorded because we'll actually be at the Las Vegas Truck Show on Saturday, so we can't do it then. And Sunday we'll be traveling back to Florida. We'll be in Florida for a day. We'll be leaving here the 21st, heading to Crossville, Tennessee, for the grand opening of Truck City Service. So while I'm thinking about it, next week there will be no podcast between the truck show and if we're going to be doing the live shows from the road. We're putting the podcast on hold for next week. So just to give you a heads up on that, we'll send an email out on the schedule as well. Truck City Service is it's kind of a joint effort. We're going to be there a lot. We're going to be very involved with that As far as doing some testing and spending time there, working on things, it's a new service center being opened by Robert Fitzgerald, right there where Fitzgerald Truck Sales is. Big, really nice shop, nice driver's lounge. It will be a full service shop. It is a full service shop. It's really, we're going to have the grand opening when we're there, but it's up and running already. And I'll give you the phone number for that in a little bit if you're interested and you want to talk to them about anything. But it is going to specialize in all of the things that we talk about here on the show. It's going to specialize in lowering fuel and maintenance costs and all of the things that we test. They will be authorized installers for all of the products. They can do the Evans conversions, all the other things we talk about here. I am working on, don't have the details worked out yet, but if I'm going to be there for 2 weeks, I want to put together some sort of a special where if you come in and you get any work done at all at Truck City Service, I'm putting together kind of a fuel mileage makeover where I will take your truck, start from the front bumper, work all the way through it, and put together a step-by-step plan on what you can do and what you should do to improve fuel mileage in the order that you should do it in. And if I get it all laid out the way I want it, it will even be able to show you cost and return on investment. That's the part I'm working on now, all the numbers. So hopefully I can get that all done. No promises yet because I've got a presentation to do in Las Vegas next week that I still haven't written. We'll be doing partners in business. I think this is the first time we've done partners in business in Las Vegas in 10 years, I bet. So that's coming up next week at the Las Vegas Truck Show on Friday. I'll be doing a partners in business seminar. Then we'll be heading to Truck City Service. So I'm not sure that I'm going to have time to get that all done, but I'm going to try. Let's see. We've got some calls here. Let's go to Lyle in Oklahoma. Welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you doing, Kevin?
Doing great. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'm kind of new to the industry a little bit. I've only been driving a couple of years. I ended up in the cattle business. And much to my chagrin, as I started listening to your program and tracking my fuel mileage, that I was driving the same speed, and then I'd find all of a sudden there was a huge difference in my fuel mileage up to a mile of a gallon. I thought, what in the world is going on here? And hadn't changed anything driving the same speed.
What were you pulling before?
Well, I was hauling grain and commodities before, but that wasn't paying good enough, so.
Yeah, you know, the livestock trailers are just notorious for lousy fuel mileage. My guess is you're heavy all of the time, and those things are just like pulling a parachute when it comes to aerodynamics.
Yes, Ken. So what happened is I started watching the fuel I was putting in, and I noticed there was a big difference in the color of the fuel. Now, this is the part maybe you can tell me more about, and that is, this is how Lyle's identified it. White, fluffy fuel is worthless. It's the one that gets you that mile a gallon less. And the darker green fuel seems to be a better quality, and then I'll get a lot better fuel mileage on it.
You know, I've tried over the years to figure out a way to test this theory because there obviously can be a difference in the quality of fuel. I mean, I wish there was a way we could pull a fuel sample and test it somewhere. And it's one of those things that I'd like to look into because, and I know it can be done. I just don't know if we can do it economically or feasibly. But what we look for is fuel, all fuel. We can measure it for how many BTUs are in that fuel. And the BTUs, that's the available energy that's in fuel. And I know I've had people over the years say, if I fuel here, I get better fuel mileage than I do over here. And I believe it. but I just don't know how to test it and how to prove it, and then I don't know what to do with the information because I don't understand the fuel delivery, who gets their fuel from who, when, and where.
Well, see, I can go get some white fuel anytime. I know where those places are.
Okay.
And what tends to happen is it'll be cheaper. I mean, you go, oh, my gosh, look at that cheap diesel. I can get me some good cheap diesel. Well, it's not
right.
Cheaper time it runs three-quarter mile a gallon less on your mileage.
Oh, absolutely. I believe that. If we could nail this down, if we could figure out a way to know the difference in the fuels and know what it would do to our fuel economy, then we could make a price comparison, because you're right. There's no way I want to buy the cheapest fuel if it hurts my economy that bad.
Well, see, I would suspect that if we talk to the owner of that wherever, they're paying a lot less for that fuel. It's a lower grade of number two diesel. I mean, I'm suspecting. So that's why it's either not as refined as well. I don't know what the process there is. But I have found, at least for me, that the color, green versus, or greenish or yellowish, you know, whatever, versus white fluffy, tends to be consistent with the way it burns.
Yeah, it very well could be. In fact, at one time, we were looking around for, like, a fuel expert. You know, somebody who really understood the whole refining process and could tell us, you know, what the differences might be and then who gets the fuel from where. And here's the other thing. You know, if we've got this fuel stop, the way I understand it, many fuel stops just buy from different distributors, they shop around. So if they one load of white fluffy fuel, that you call it, and then halfway through they get a better load, now we've got a blend. So it's really just hard to nail this down. I believe that you're right. I just don't know how to measure it and what to do about it. Now, if that color thing works, then, you know, I would certainly try sticking with the places that have, you know, better-looking fuel.
Well, I talked to some other guys about it, you know, on down here and there and yonder, and I found out, well, you know, this one guy, he started when he was young trucking, and he said, my father always taught me, make sure you get the dark green fuel because that other lighter color fuel is not as good. I mean, so it's evidently consistent down through time or something. I don't know.
It could be. And like I said, I know I've looked at this a bunch of times, and I just can't come up with a way to quantify this or to figure it out.
Yeah. But, you know, on what I have been getting, if I drive 57, even loaded like I am, I've been getting up around 7. So I don't feel bad about that.
No, if you're getting that kind of fuel mileage pulling livestock, you're doing fantastic.
But I still need to do several things. I need to do the air tabs. I couldn't hear or understand what the last thing God just before was going to do. What was he going to do?
Two things we talked about. The FASS system, FASS. Is that what you mean?
Yes. What is that?
That is FASS stands for Fuel Air Separator System. It is a fuel. It replaces the fuel filters that are currently on the truck. And the unit itself has its own electric pump, so it actually pumps fuel at a higher pressure, so we get better fuel pressure across the rail, and the filter assembly is designed to remove all the air out of the fuel. See, one of the things you're talking about, white fluffy fuel, could be a sign that the fuel is somewhat aerated.
There you go. I agree with that. Because when it comes out of the nozzle, it seems to be, well, like it's got air in it.
Exactly. And get that in our fuel lines, too. We get that actually happens on the truck. And the FASS is designed to take all that air out of the fuel.
Okay, well, that makes sense now. What I have done, I put the OPS on. I did that, and I looked at my tires, so I've got my tires about right. And on my OPS right now, I've got right at 65,000 on this oil, and I'm fixing to pull an oil sample, so it's doing well. I'm only using Well, a gallon every 16,000. I've got 935,000 on my truck.
Wow, that's a solid engine.
It is. It's a good. Everything seems to be tight. Transmission's tight, and the engine's tight in it. I mean, it's a good running engine. So
yeah,
I'm tickled.
Hold on. Sounds like you're on the right track.
All righty, sounds good. I'll just keep on going down and putting on the next thing.
There you go. That's the way it works. One thing, and then, you know, take the savings, move on to the next thing. And I've been doing this a long time. I'm still finding stuff. I mean, we're just about done with the Evans coolant test. Another week we're going to give it, so that we did a 30-day test prior, which was just at about 11,000 miles. I've got it updated now to 9,000 miles. So another week, less than a week, and we'll be right at the same mileage, 30 days prior, 30 days after. One of the trucks is up 2.8% on fuel mileage, which is a pretty nice gain. You know, figure that the Evans conversion is going to cost you $750 roughly by the time you pay for the coolant and the labor. If you do it yourself, you could save a little bit of money, and it's really not that difficult. Right now, I've got the savings calculated at $1,500 for the first year. So you've got a six-month return on investment, and we basically double our money in the first 12 months after that. That's pretty hard to beat considering we get the other benefits from Evans as well. Now the other truck, we're at 6.4, almost 6.5% improvement on fuel mileage. I think that's a little skewed, though. I don't think we picked all of that up with Evans. And fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not sure which, before we were able to finish the test, I had to replace the drive tires. I thought we were going to be able to get through the test on what we had, but I had to replace the drive tire. I was a little worried about going into the safety check. They were really borderline. So I replaced the Bridgestone Graytech wide singles, which has a pretty horrible rolling resistance. We were testing those. We replaced them with the X1 XDA Energy. So I think about half of this increase was the Evans conversion. And I think the other 3% or so is what we're picking up from the tire change. But we could already see the upward trend before we made the tire change. So I'm confident that 2 to 3% on the Evans conversion is definitely doable, and we get the other benefits. So I'm pretty happy. That's a new product we're adding to the list here. Let's go to Indiana. Kerry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. 2.8% on coolant, but nothing on propane?
Yeah, well, let me give you the numbers on propane. We are down. Here's the complicated thing about propane. Almost everything else that we test is really a one-time cost. You know, when we do the Evans conversion, there's really just the one-time cost. Let's call it $750 or whatever it is. If we put on air tabs, one-time cost, $200, $250, whatever it turns out to be. Yep. So then at some point, even if you only pick up a tiny amount of fuel mileage, at some point you will overcome that cost. That's our break-even point. And start saving money, and that's our return on investment calculation. But we know when it's going to be, and there really aren't that many variables. The problem with propane and calculating whether or not there's any real savings here is when we put a propane system on, we have the initial cost of the propane system. That's easy enough. But now we have a new cost every day. We have the cost of the propane. And now the cost of the propane can change every day, and it can change depending on where we get it, and the cost of the diesel can change every day. And because both those two costs change, this is a very tough thing to figure out. So what I did, my thought was, first of all, we need to see whether or not propane can really lower our costs. Will it improve our diesel fuel economy, and will it overcome enough to cover the cost of the propane and save us some money? So the way I'm running the test is we are not changing the cost of diesel and the cost of propane. We have them fixed for the whole test. So I don't care what I'm really paying for it. We're testing it as though we, the whole 30 days, that price doesn't change.
And you're still losing.
Yeah, we're still losing. And here's kind of the history on this. When they first put on the system, the company said, we really like to run our propane consumption at 40 miles to the gallon. That seems to be where we get the biggest increase in fuel economy. If we do more than that, if we use more propane, really doesn't help. So in the beginning, we set it right at 40 miles to the gallon. Fuel mileage went up 8/10 of a mile per gallon, which is big. I mean, that's a lot, but it wasn't enough. In order to break even, we needed to go up a full mile per gallon, and in order to make this worth it, we needed to go up about 1.3. We only went up 8/10. Then, unfortunately, what's that?
And you guys have got air tabs?
Not on this truck, we don't. This is the only one of my three. Yeah, two of my trucks have it.
A gallon right there.
You can't get a mile per gallon out of air tabs.
I did. I sure did. And that have no monetary value in this whatsoever.
No, I know you don't. That's amazing. I mean,
yep.
That's a big jump.
7.1 normal to 8.1 normal. The first week I had them, I don't know if you watched that post or not, but the first week I had them, they didn't put them across the top of the fairing.
Okay.
And that whole week I got 7.8. And my run doesn't vary but a couple tenths of a mile per day. I mean, I go everywhere the same place.
It's like my runs vary. Yeah.
I'm probably wearing ruts in the cement where I'm driving, you know.
Right.
So first 4 days on the first week, it was 7.8. That weekend, they put them across the top. And then I was getting 8.1, 8.3. Yesterday, I had to do somebody else's run. I had more two-lane hills, and it was a heavier load. And I got 7.69, I think it was. I think that's what I said it was. Let's see.
Great number.
7.69. And that was a heavier load on two-lane roads with hills, curvy, you know, out in the boondocks. And then today I went back to my normal run and got 8.11.
Yeah, those are amazing numbers. I mean, we know that they work. There's no question. We know they improve fuel mileage. We know that they improve stability, rain spray, all those things. I've just never seen a mile per gallon. That's pretty amazing. Aren't you in a rental truck?
Well, it's a Ryder truck, yeah.
Yeah, so like a full service lease.
Right. And it's a 09 Cascadia with a DD15 with DPF and EGR and every other thing EPA can choke us with.
Yeah. Who made the decision to put the air tabs on?
The company. We've tried air tabs. We've tried the skirts on the trailers. We've tried the bat wings on the back of the trailers. We've tried the fly swatter mud flaps. they canceled the bat wings on the back. They didn't show any improvement. The skirts on the trailer, I think they're still iffy on that, whether they're showing enough improvement to justify the cost.
Right.
The fly swatter, mud flaps, they're not going to do them, but they definitely are doing the air tabs.
Have they done air tabs on any of the trailers yet?
Yes, they've got two air tabs on the trailer, and I'm dying to pull the trailer that's got the air tabs and the skirts.
Yeah, I think that in the testing that I've seen, I'd love air tabs on the tractor, but I think on the trailer it makes an even bigger difference.
Did you see what it did to my black rubber on my fairing?
No.
It it rippled it.
Huh.
It's permanently rippled now. It was completely straight. That first morning I came with the air tabs, it was perfectly straight. I was going down the road, and this is what got me interested in even keeping track, because, you know, like I said, I don't have any monetary gain in this. They're not going to give me a penny.
Right.
But I was going down the road, and I seen that my black fairing was rippled.
Now, they're not on the rubber, right? They're installed on the painted surface.
Right. They're just in front of the black rubber.
Yeah. So what's happening is the vortex, the vortices that they're creating are actually affecting the rubber itself behind the air tab, yeah.
Yep, and it permanently, they're like that now. When I stop, they're ribbled.
Interesting.
That's what got me interested to even watch it. I'm going, holy cow, it's doing something because it's rippling my rubber, you know?
Yeah, there's no question they changed the airflow quite a bit.
Yep, and I was trying to get a raise out of them by driving efficiently and trying to get the mileage up on this truck. And I you probably know I've been having trouble with this truck. But after numerous campaigns on the engine, I finally got it up to 7.1, you know, 6.9 to 7.1 for an average. I was getting like 5.3, 5.4.
Oh, that's horrible.
But, yeah, that is horrible, especially for a Cascadia when they're bragging about them, you know. But like
yeah.
I say, they did a bunch of campaigns on the engine and a new DPF filter and a new doser valve. I guess they're having a bunch of problems with the doser valves, which squirts the fuel to the DPF.
Right.
Okay. So I was in the 7.1, and then that was just normal. And after I seen this rippling effect, I said, well, I wonder what it's actually doing. And I started watching it again, and I was amazed. And I'm going to keep watching it every day. And if I'm up above 8 miles per gallon every day, I'm going to be a little bit mad if I don't get at least $5 a day.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's
huge savings on their part.
Yeah, they're saving about $30 a day.
Yeah.
And,
savings.
In 10 days, they're paid for.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's a – and like I say, I don't know if maybe some of this was cumulative from some of the other things they've been doing to the truck.
My 7.1 was where it stopped after they did all the work on it. Because I've got
I've never seen an improvement that big on the, you know, with all the things we do for fuel mileage. I mean, I've tested a lot of things over the years. I don't know that I have ever tested one single thing that's ever improved my fuel mileage 1 full mile per gallon.
Yeah, well, you know, I drive like a grandpa, and it's governed to 62, but I do run it against the governor all day long once I get up to speed.
Yeah, you know, that's not a problem on an electronic engine, though. That idea of being against the governor goes way – I mean, you just dated yourself because that goes way back for us old-timers when it was a mechanical governor, and that was a problem. Now
right.
It really doesn't matter.
I'm not speed now. Don't want to date myself if I was a girl.
Yeah.
But yeah, it don't make a difference with an electronic. But, you know, it's 62 miles an hour. I've got 90% interstate on my run, maybe even a little more. I got 82 miles of two-lane in Kentucky.
Yeah, that's –
And that's all my two-lane. And I time it so I can go through the towns hitting all the lights, you know. I'll just sit there and hold back and – hit all the lights.
Right.
So I'm, you know, I'm doing the Smith system.
Good.
Know.
Good.
But,
all right. Keep us updated on what's going on with that thing.
Yeah, I'll keep posting my mileage on there for at least another week, 2 weeks, see what it is.
All right.
If it, you know, take 3 weeks, and if it's still up in the eights, it's got to be the air tabs because nothing else was done to it.
All right. Keep us informed.
Good evening. Yep.
All right. You too. All right, so here's a quick rundown on where I was going with the propane. When the propane usage was right at 40 miles to the gallon, We fell a little short. We were going to let it run for a couple weeks, though, just to see what would happen. Unfortunately, something went wrong with the system. We're not sure what, because propane usage went from 40 miles to the gallon to 60 miles to the gallon. And when we started using less propane, going farther on the propane, fuel mileage dropped back down. Now we went in, we put a new system on. They set it this time to get 30 miles to the gallon on propane. So in the beginning, we were using 13 gallons of propane a day. When the system wasn't working right, we were using 9 gallons of propane a day. And now we're using 18 gallons of propane a day. But fuel mileage still hasn't come up enough to overcome it. Now, we just got the system kind of working again. We've got it tweaked to this 30 miles to the gallon on propane. So I'm going to give it a couple weeks to see what happens. But I'm beginning to think that on an over-the-road Class 8 truck already getting in the 6 to 7 mile to the gallon range, it's going to be very difficult to make propane work economically. Now, I've got a big advantage in a test like this because the truck is in the same place every day, and I have we've contracted with a propane company to deliver at $1.99 a gallon. And, you know, if you were out on the road and you had to pay $3 a gallon, these numbers really wouldn't work. But I'll keep you updated. We're not done with that one yet. We're still trying. Maybe there's something we can get out of this. Let's go to Kentucky. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having the podcast, Kevin. This is
You're welcome. Thanks for being here.
Makes it a lot more informative to me. I don't know.
I like to
get it into an hour and get all the advertisements in, too.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, I had Bambi jump out in front of me and, I don't know, pretty much hashed my bumper on an 03 Volvo V&L.
Okay.
I know of a guy, I found a guy who would build me a fiberglass bumper deeper than what I actually had, than what the stock Volvo mode bumpers are.
All right.
Didn't know if you thought it'd be worth a shot to try and go down that road to... I mean, I actually would like a deeper bumper than what I actually have now. If there'd be any fuel mileage savings in that or not.
You know, it's possible that the thing about the Volvo, I mean, if this were a 379 or a W9, the way we modified the bumper on slick, I would say absolutely there's going to be a fuel mileage gain. Volvos are pretty aerodynamically designed the way they are. That doesn't mean they can't be improved on.
Right.
And yeah, if I were in this situation and I could get someone to build me one at a pretty reasonable price, I'd try it.
Yeah, he actually quoted me cheaper price than what you can get them from Volvo at.
I'm not surprised there. I just put a mirror on a Volvo and it cost me $1,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they probably only had $100 in the blasted thing, but...
Well, and you know what the worst, I know that their parts are always expensive. They just are. I expected that. The worst part for me, though, was that they never have the part in stock. I lost a day's run because the mirror was literally wiped out. I mean, it was shattered. It was the passenger side. There's no way I could send the driver out with it. And we lost a day of running. You know, we're on a dedicated run. We can't make that up. Once we lose that run, we've lost the run. So... You know, by the time you add in the downtime and the missed day, because Volvo just never stocks anything. They make me crazy.
Yeah, I know what you mean there. Some of them stock them very good. I've already put I just got done putting Echo Pure on. That is absolutely the guys there are awesome.
Don't you love that system? Yeah.
It was so simple to put on to you, you know.
Well, and it's such an easy system to maintain now with the spin-on filter. And I'm going to have to cut you loose. You're really starting to break up. With the spin-on filter and how easy it is to take a sample, one unit now, that they really put a lot of design work into that, and it shows, and it really paid off. I mean, I loved the OPS-1. I had it for years. But the Echo Pure really, I mean, there's no question in my mind now, that's the only bypass filter I would use. Let's go to Arkansas. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Kevin. How y'all doing this afternoon or evening?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just put my truck in the shop this week. I was telling Lisa I'm having to replace the front cover on a Series 60 Detroit, so I went out and got some Pittsburgh Power parts once we have it tore down to replace the silicon-filled damper, and the mercury-filled balancer is going to go on it, as well as a high-flow muffler. Now that I have that covered taken apart, other than all the other obvious parts around it that might need to be replaced in there, anything you can recommend that I might do off the top of your head that might be something good to look at before we put her back together?
How many miles are on it?
Well, I did a major P3 Detroit on it 130,000 miles ago. The engine total, 1,135,000.
On that rebuild, did they do the bull gear?
No. That's where we're at right now, you know, pulling the front cover off. They supposedly test before they did the end frame and felt like it was, you know, solid enough. But what I started getting was oil leakage around the cover, so the cover may be cracked. So that's why we tore into it.
Yeah, boy, if that's the original bull gear, I mean, unless they can look at it and know that it's really solid, I would consider replacing it because those do go on the Detroits. I mean, that is one thing that we see fail is the bull gear. So if I were in there, I would think about doing it.
Yeah, we're definitely going to look at that. I just, you know, I know that's one of the obvious and the main functioning gear. If that goes down, it ruins everything else that you just did. So.
Yeah. But other than that, nothing else I can think of that I'd worry about.
Yeah, when I asked about replacing the damper, of course, you know, they don't even recommend it, and that's crazy after all the research I've done on that.
I know. I've got a great relationship with my Detroit shop, but I haven't been there a lot in the last couple of years with all my travel, but I stopped in this week because I think I've got some bad injectors on one of my trucks, so it's in for an overhead, and we're looking at the injectors. And I was trying to convince them of the damper, and I think they get it now. But they, you know, this has been industry-wide. People look at that thing like it's a big, solid hunk of metal and nothing could ever go wrong with it, and that's just not the case.
Well, and if that is the case, they want it to be that way. They want to dispose of them and put some new stuff out on the market. I understand that. But, you know, just like classic cars, you know, they've refined and refined and refined to where they can rebuild those things to, a working piece of art. And there's no reason why we can't do that with our big trucks as well.
Well, that's really what we're working towards. You know, slowly but surely, that's what we're working towards, to keep a working, really efficient truck going for a long time and keep it really enjoyable to drive.
Yeah. By the way, I haven't gotten to many more of the updates that you guys advertise on your program, but I'm working towards that goal of trying some of these different things. But that said in mind, it's a 2000 model, 370 horse Detroit, and I don't have an exact average. I do track my fuel each time, but I haven't rounded an average, but it produces anywhere from 7.25 to a high as 8.75 on one trip.
Yeah, those are good numbers, no question about it. Those, you know, and you gotta love that year, that couple years of Detroit's. I've got two of them, and I'm keeping them both because those are great engines. We are currently, you know, talking about that project. I think we've settled on the truck we're going to buy for our new project, which is totally reconditioning a truck. We haven't worked out all the details on it yet, but we're looking at a 2000 Volvo. And one of the reasons it's got the drive line that I want, it's a direct drive. I think it's got 279s in it. We're trying to verify that right now. It's got a Cummins in it, and the engine's shot. So which doesn't matter to us anyway. We're going to tear this thing apart. And I thought, let's go all the way. This is a truck we're going to be able to pick up for about $3,500, I think. And then we'll pull that Cummins out. And it's not that tough to change the wiring harness on these for Detroit. We're really just going to build a truck. It's almost not even like rebuilding it. We're going to just about build this thing, and we'll keep you updated on what's going on with that. Let's see. I better get to some calls. We're starting to run out of time. Let's go to Kentucky. Rick, welcome to the program.
How you doing, sir?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Thanks to Miss Lisa. Hey, Kevin, for your next truck, I thought you were going to do a W900, man.
How we did that. That's slick.
I thought you were going to do a classic with the big bumper and the fins on the top and all that stuff.
Ah, no, Bruce did that already. I think he sold that, too. I think he sold his signature truck this week.
Hey, Kevin, I hear you guys talking about changing the numbers in the ECM when you change tires as far as your fuel mileage accuracy.
Right.
Now, when I got this truck about 2 years ago, they put new tires on the back on my drives. Would that have anything to do? They didn't change any numbers in the computer. Would that throw my numbers off as far as the fuel mileage I'm getting right now?
It can, because when I look at a list of tires, even though we really only talk about four different tire sizes, when we refer to tires, we either call them 11R24.5s, low pro 24.5s, 11R22.5s, or low pro 22.5s. Those are the only four sizes we really talk about generically. But if I look at a list of all the available tires, and I look at the RPM of that tire, the revolutions per mile, it is all over the board. There's about 40 different numbers. And some of them might only be two or three numbers away, but they're still different. Every tire is a slightly different diameter, which changes that the number of times it rolls per mile. So really, any time we change tires, we should be going in and verifying that number. Now, here's a quick way to tell how close you are, and that's just to check the accuracy of your speedometer. If you've got a GPS, all the newer GPSs are really accurate. I mean, I never used to trust GPS as far as, you know, my exact speed, but the new generation GPS is really accurate. I've tested a bunch of them. So if you've got a GPS, just look at the speed on your GPS and your speedometer. If they're within a mile or two of each other, I wouldn't worry about it. If they're more than 2 miles an hour off, I would get the RPM change. The other way, if you don't have a GPS, is just time the truck, set the cruise right at 60 miles an hour on your speedometer, and it should take you exactly 60 seconds between mileposts.
I heard you talk about that, and I tried that, and it exactly what you said. So would that mean I'm good?
Then you're good. Don't change it.
Oh, good deal, good deal. Hey, Kevin, as far as checking, I checked my charger cooler the other day. I always hear you say, check the charger cooler, check the charger cooler. I had a leak, a hole in one of my one of the rubber boots.
Okay.
I'm 6771 in a W900 with a 6 and Z. And
okay.
I ran two tanks since I changed that boot, and I went up to 741 just
wow.
by that boot.
That's outstanding.
So,
yeah, that's.
And, I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
No, I also went on your website this weekend, and I checked the rolling resistance on my tires, and I got very bad rolling resistance on these tires right here. My whole is the whole vehicle, I think it said, is 119.26. That's not too good.
Yeah, it's not horrible, but it's there's certainly some room for improvement. But 119 overall isn't that bad. You know, I look at a lot of trucks, and they're in the 130 to 140 range. I like to get down to that 100 or lower range. So you've got some room for improvement, which is, you know, you've got it 3 or 4 more tenths of a mile per gallon you might be able to pick up. And if you get any more, you're going to be doing some pretty amazing numbers out of a W9. Good stuff. Let's go to Louisiana. Lance, welcome to the program.
Evening, Kevin. Hey,
hey there.
You said you've never seen a product that could raise fuel mileage by 1 mile per gallon. Well, the driver can.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's true. So 30 to 35%. So you're right. A driver could.
Yeah, and then that gentleman called about the fuel. One thing a lot of us forget about and with diesel fuel is there's a lot of flavors. I drove a delivery truck for a while hauling a Pilot, Flying J, and Amvest. Fuel, we might see it as all fuel, but there are so many additives. I don't know the exact number. I'd say over 50 available right at the rack. And
wow.
Some of them might get 8, 9, 10. They might get 8, 9, 10 additives each time. And then also the raw fuel, and this is the problem I've had issue with for a long time. We've all heard of hot fuel. There's a bigger issue than hot fuel, and that's how they determine what is diesel fuel. It's such a wide range in the cetane level. And that's something I'm surprised as an industry we're not very outspoken about because we're all getting the shaft on that one. But
I've said that before. We're making such a big deal about hot fuel, and I don't think hot fuel is that big of a deal. If it is, then we should also be talking about cold fuel. And I think that but the bigger deal is exactly what you just said. If we're going to make an issue of something, I want to know how many BTUs per gallon I'm getting because that's where the big variation is going to come from.
Exactly. I'd recommend people, they get a chance, fire up your search engine and just look at that. Look at how they determine what diesel is. And that's something that's really bugged me. We hear all about hot fuel. Like you say, I don't hear no one complaining about buying cold fuel. So,
right.
I don't hear no one complaining about that. And one other thing, you know, when you see people wanting to get into having their own truck, you've been a company driver, you may talk to them, you've done this a lot, talking to drivers, and let's say you're just grasping, they're not understanding that they're getting ready to buy a truck, 5 years of payment, a big investment to be a business person. I've talked to some of these guys, and I'm like, oh, well, it just doesn't work on paper. It never does. I'll go buy the truck, and it'll be okay. And what do you honestly tell them, and what would you think about telling someone like that to try one of these very expensive walk-away leases? Say, go try that for a year. Because if you can make that work, you might be okay. But I've seen these guys make huge investments in trucks, and they're not ready to be business people. They're not.
I agree.
What would you think about something like that?
Well, and I've said this, that there are, I think, as much as I discourage people from lease purchase programs, and they're certainly not my favorite, I think there are two times when they make a lot of sense. One is when you absolutely have a burning desire to be an owner-operator. You've tried every other way, and for whatever reason, it's not going to work. And that was a bigger issue a couple years ago when trucks were expensive. My take now is if you can't afford to become an owner-operator in today's market with $12,000 trucks around, then you shouldn't be an owner-operator because you're not ready. But the other way, I think what you're saying, is to kind of use one of those walkaways as a test. Go
right.
Try this before you commit yourself to really owning the truck. I guess the big thing is that we just have to know everything that's in that lease.
Exactly. Well, and one other thing, right now everyone's talking how busy we are. You got to remember, we've had a lot of capacity come out of the trucking industry in the last 2 years. And we're busy right now. We're always busy right now. It's cyclical. Every year, we're busy right now.
Right. Yeah, this could change. This could change quick. And, You know, speaking of lease purchases, when they're recruiting 400,000 new drivers in the next 2 years, imagine what some of these companies are do with lease purchase programs and people brand new to the industry. We're going to see a lot of failures, more than normal. All right, I'm all out of time. Thanks, everybody, for joining me. The live show is coming up in 30 minutes. I'll see you there. We'll see you back here again tomorrow night for the pit and open phone lines tomorrow night. Remember, be safe, be profitable, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.